It's Celtics coverage on clnsradio.com.
Sensational move from Kyrie Irving. Oh, Hayward. Hofford lays it up and in.
Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll free, 347-215-7771.
Hey, everybody. Bobby Manning, Cal McLeod with you on Celtics Post Game on CLNS Media. CLNSmedia.com. It's coming Monday. We talked to you about it after the 76ers win the other day, and I'll tell you about it again today. It's a great new website we're launching for the network. CLNSradio.com has just gotten a little too old. It looks like one of those websites out of the 90s now that you probably see from time to time from like these old companies. But anyway, we're going new. We're going fresh. It is a fantastic-looking site. And it's going to be the home to all of the programs you love here at CLNS Media, including the Celtics post-game show. So be sure to check that out on Monday when it launches. It's beautiful. It looks really nice, and it's going to be easy to toggle between all your favorite coverage of the NBA, hockey, Red Sox. All our coverage is moving over there to clnsmedia.com, so be sure to check that out. Today, Saturday, afternoon show getting going here. It's kind of a sluggish day for everybody, even the Celtics. They just did not look themselves today on the defensive end, and it almost ended up in a loss, but they hold on 116 to 111 today. We're going to make it a little bit of an agenda-free Saturday, so call in about whatever you want after this game. We'll talk Celtics-Suns. Plenty to talk about from this game, but we're all feeling a little sluggish today, so we'll get you involved as much as you can. 347-215-7771. Our call lines are brought to you by Greats. The maker of the all-time great shoes right out of Brooklyn, New York, everybody's favorite hub of art, music, everything else. So you know these shoes are stylish, and they are coming to you at a great price. A lot of these companies out there surcharging shoes like crazy, making you wait in lines outside. Just go with the simple, sleek, great design of Greats this holiday season. Get yourself a pair for men, for women. They got so many different styles over there. Our hosts have been wearing them here at the network. And they are a great, great gift for anybody. Old, young, people are going to just love these shoes this holiday season. And thanks to them giving you 15% off, CLNS Media. Your code is Celtics Roundtable. That's one word, Celtics Roundtable. And go see what they got over there, greats.com. Save 15% while you're doing it. And thanks to them for sponsoring this program. 15% off your first order, Celtics Roundtable. Please visit greats.com. Let's get going here. 116-111, Taylor. Feel good about them coming out of this game with a win? I mean, you always feel good about a win, but I didn't love the defense today. And that's something that's kind of been slacking for a few nights now, even though they're 2-1 over the last three. Detroit game, the loss was really rough. Philly was rough for stretches as well, despite it being a convincing win. And today, it was just straight up terrible for stretches.
Yeah, I think the 1 o'clock start on a Saturday has something to do with it. That's just a weird time to start. But before the game, Brad Stevens said, you know, if you're in the playoffs, you're playing these late after or early afternoon games, so got to get used to it now. I think it was just a weird game. That Devin Booker, Tyson Chandler pick and roll, just they couldn't guard it. And then Devin Booker just you tweeted out that it was volume scoring, but he still put up 38. You know, weird game. Glad the Celtics won. I'm not taking too much from it. No negatives, no positives, but you know, it is what it is.
And we're probably a little under a year from the last time the Suns played here, which was the Devin Booker 70-point game. Some of the stats out of that are still ridiculous. Most points ever scored against the Celtics. Most points ever scored at the TD Garden. So he has those records. They could put a banner up for him if they wanted to, but they won't. But anyway, that game
seems like Celtics fans and then Tommy and Mike love the guy. Like they love him. So they might put a banner up. You never know.
Really, everybody still talks about that game all the time, but it's still something that pisses me off because just looking back on it, it was ridiculous. The last 5 minutes, the guy took like 15 extra shots just to get from like 50 to 70. Not saying it wasn't a great game. The fact that he was at 50 at that juncture says a lot, but I don't put it in the same breath as Kobe, some of the great scoring games of all time. Of course, don't put it in that 100-point game that we don't have video of. I mean, what do you think of that, Taylor? Is that, should we remember that as one of the great performances ever?
I don't know about great performances ever. Obviously, 70 points is 70 points. That's impressive by itself, no matter how many shots you take. 70 points is a whole lot of points. But it does strike me as kind of weird that Celtics fans and even the Celtics broadcasters, like Tommy and Mike tonight, they were all over Devin Booker. Everything he did, the guy took a breath. They're like, oh, great form. Like, wow, you really filled your lungs up that time. Like, I like Devin Booker. I really do. I like the Slam Mag piece, or at least their movement they were having, you know, Devin Booker is your favorite Hooper's favorite Hooper. That was cool. But geez, like, it was weird to hear Celtics fans and Celtics broadcasters all over Devin Booker.
Yeah, and the wins just keep piling up for these Celtics, which is a great, great trend. But as I've been saying all season, Taylor, there are some weaknesses on this team, tangible weaknesses that need to come a long way for them to actually be one of the best teams in the league. Or Brad Stevens, I'll tell you, Brad, as great of a coach as he is, which is just evident from the results out there, when you listen to him talk, like, you really get great insight into, like, where the team's at, what they're thinking, what they're doing. Like, you just learn so much from listening to this guy. You should really listen to every single post-game presser Stevens does, because this guy is just a wealth of knowledge. It's the opposite of Jim Boeheim, where he just sits there and rambles after the games and rips his players. And, like, I mean, there's just a lot of great, intelligent basketball. I, no offense to Boeheim, legend in his own right, Hall of Famer, but he just does it a different way. Anyway, that's a different conversation. So Brad Stevens rolling this team forward, and he says it himself, like, this, as good as this team is, he doesn't even think they're a contender yet.
Obviously, I disagree. We know they are a contender. We know, but he's got a little bit of Belichick in him, and it comes out more and more as the time goes on. You know, being a huge Pats guy that I am, like, I love that. But the one thing that irritated me tonight, it's kind of irritated me a little bit. You see that the
today.
Second unit can't – or today, I'm sorry. Yeah,
man,
so
the sun's out.
I'm all over the place. you see it pretty consistently that the second unit can't ever hold a lead, and they've tried mixing and matching, like having Tatum play with the second unit, having Brown play with the second unit. One thing that irritates me – or not irritates me, but has been, you know, on my mind lately is these rotations – and how they get so out of whack sometimes. And, you know, if Kyrie and Al Horford aren't on the floor, then things go to hell. But sometimes they don't. It's very strange. And today, you know, Marcus Morris is going off in the end of the third quarter. The rotations got out of whack, and Kyrie didn't come in until 4:32 left in the fourth. And I understand wanting to hold Kyrie out. You know, he plays a lot of minutes, and he's, you know, high motor guy. But it was just very strange to me when the game kind of got close as time went on. I thought we were going to see Kyrie earlier. And so it's just something to look at. The rotations right now.
I don't think they want to really hammer Kyrie with minutes through the season. There's a new training staff in there. I'm still waiting for some insight on how this year is going to be different from past years when it comes to that training staff. You know, I'm going to try to look into it a little myself as best I can, especially when I'm back in the Boston area. But that's something interesting this year, because I feel like they're really managing Kyrie's minutes. You see him go in for a stretch of time to really lay the hammer down. But then when he comes out, he stays out. He gets 6-7 minute stretches on the bench where they just try to make it work out there. And, you know, you can't complain about it. You got to manage your players. You got to, you know, keep a tab on their health and their minutes
right,
and all that through the regular season. Guys have been hurt in the past few years that really hurt this team down the stretch of the season. But, you know, you don't want Kyrie up at the LeBron minutes, 38, 40 minutes.
No.
But my only, they're doing that with Irving, but why isn't Horford getting more of a rest? I mean, he's the old guy on this team, not old, but older. He's been injured quite a bit in the past, including last postseason. I think he was dealing with nagging injuries as well. I wonder why he doesn't get a little bit. I was talking to the Snotty about this on the last show. Not even the minutes, but the amount of usage they put on Horford is crazy. And so Irving's getting these long stretches out of games. Why not the same for Horford?
I think, you know, you and I know it as, you know, hardcore Celtics fans, the real basketball junkies know it. Horford is what makes this team go. Like, without Horford, so many things can't work correctly. So I think the more you have him on the floor, the better Brad feels and the better Celtics fans feel about the direction the team is moving in that particular game on offense and defense. So I think that's why he doesn't see the long stretches, because you don't want to take the guy who is essentially the engine to everything, even though people don't like to talk about it, or even though people think, you know, not as much this year, but last year, they're like, oh, why isn't he averaging, you know, 20 and 15? Because he's not that kind of a player. But I think when you have a guy like that, you don't want to take him off before for extended periods of time because, you know, things can really go to hell, and you definitely don't want that.
We're talking Celtics, Suns, 116-111 victors over, the Celtics were victors over the Suns today, 116-111. It almost got scared a few times today, Taylor. Stretches of bad defense down the end of the game, really in that 7 to 5 minute mark after the Celtics actually called a timeout. The Suns just came roaring back. Booker, Jared Dudley playing off each other a little bit. Phoenix's pick and roll was deadly today, and you really see in Devin Booker how important it is for a absolute stud to have that ball handling capability. I say it again and again, you cannot be a superstar in this league without being able to handle that ball. And that's still what scares me to Jaylen with Jaylen Brown at this point is he does. You just cannot imagine Jaylen Brown doing what Booker did today, coming around screens, passing, distributing, hammering those alley-oops to Tyson Chandler with him running north to south. That's really what Jaylen Brown's got to come a long way in doing. And, Booker, you see in him one of the great, great talents in the game right now. It doesn't get a ton of attention. You know, gets more than you'd expect out of a superstar in Phoenix. But this guy, where are we going to put him in the league right now among the best of the best? Because he is getting pretty high up there right now.
Yeah, I think you nailed it, or you hit the nail right in the head when you said the attention in Phoenix. You know, they're one of the worst teams in the West. They're poorly managed. There's a lot of problems down in Phoenix.
Yeah.
I don't think he gets the attention he deserves. As far as where you put him with the best of the best right now, his defense is bad. His defense is really bad, so I don't think you can call him like one of the best players in the league right now. But in terms of pure scoring, you know, people always describe Kyrie Irving as a professional bucket getter. Devin Booker is a professional bucket getter. Any way you want it. He'll hit you with a three from 5 feet behind the arc, standard three. He'll drive on you. He'll pull up at the free throw line. He'll hit elbow jumpers. You know, the guy can get a bucket any way he wants it. So in terms of pure scores, he's definitely top 10 in the league in my book. But as an overall player, his defense has to improve for me to consider him there. But the thing is, he's, I think, what, 21, 22 years old? He's got a lot of time ahead of him.
You think they're going to – I just saw Chris Mannix tweet it out. This guy's a legit franchise player, superstar, a guy who you're going to build your team around. Do you think in the next 2 years, which is a great window for them to do it, he's making $2 million a year. $2 million this year, like $3 million next year before he hits restricted free agency. He is just such a bargain right now for them. Do you think they're going to be able to put a tangible contender together around him? Not championship contender, but playoff contender before that contract comes up. They got good young pieces right there, but in the West, it's tough. We talked about their management. It's tough. They just fired their coach in Earl Watson, who looked like he was leading a decent little up-and-coming team last year, and they give up on him that quick. I don't even know who their coach is now. I saw him today.
It's Jay Triano, I think his name is.
Yeah, I don't know who that is.
Yeah, exactly.
So are they going to be able to do something with Booker? Is this just empty production, kind of like what we're seeing out of Anthony Davis in New Orleans?
I hope it's not empty production, but if you're gun to my head, that's what I'd say it is. I think Josh Jackson's a nice piece. I think Dragon Bender's a nice piece. You know, they both have improvements to make. TJ Warren played a pretty solid game tonight.
What do you think of Josh Jackson?
He's got weird hair, and I'm so glad the Celtics took Tatum over him. He's got that, like, Kansas Jayhawk cut. Devontae Graham has it right now. Like, you see a lot of the tall hair right now, but his goes out. Real strange.
Wiggins have that?
Yeah, Wig did have it, and then he cut it off. Or I think he's got braids right now, but...
Anyway, how about Josh Jackson's basketball game? We can talk about it a different time.
I think Josh Jackson is a better player than people give him credit for. I think because Tatum has been so good, he doesn't get the shine he deserves. He hasn't been doing anything special in Phoenix, but I liked his game at Kansas. His jump shot's a little bit questionable. He's definitely very athletic. He's a good defender. I think his situation will dictate a lot of his success. And, you know, as we just said, his situation isn't great, but he's young. He's talented. He's a great athlete. I don't want to make any judgments on him now, but I think he'll be a good player in the NBA. What his ceiling is, I can't be sure, but I think he'll be a good guy.
You see the collection of players out there. Marquise Chris, good young talent. Hasn't really panned out so far, but you know there's athleticism there. TJ Warren, great, great young volume shooter there. They've had for a little while now. Tyler Ulis, a nice crafty little point guard they have. Doesn't have the height, but definitely has the skill, you can see.
I love Tyler Ulis.
Yeah, Josh Jackson. Dragon Bender, who they committed to early in one of the past drafts. Alex Len, who I guess is hurt right now or not playing or something, but you know he's got a little bit of talent. Yeah, he's all right.
He's just tall.
Yeah. Well, he was another big pick for them, too. I mean, they've had so many top picks over the years. What are they missing, right? Is it the coach? Is it the veterans? They brought Jared Dudley back, but they don't have a lot of Tyson Chandler they brought in as well. So they do have the veterans here. Just something's not clicking for them. Another 8-16 season in the works. They're going to be in the lottery again. It just feels like lost opportunity after lost opportunity for this franchise since Steve Nash left.
Absolutely. I think, you know, I'd be lying if I said I knew all the history of the Phoenix Suns or their management history or, you know, who's there, who's where. But ever since they signed three point guards, or they had three point guards in Goran Dragic, Eric Bledsoe, and Isaiah Thomas, then they traded IT, traded Goran. I think they won 48 games that season, almost made the playoffs, and it looked like, you know, oh, wow, Phoenix on the come up. Picked Booker, and then things have just gone downhill. You know, they've had coaching changes. Their management hasn't been great. You know, the whole Eric Bledsoe saga where he tweeted out, I don't want to be here, and then they had to trade him for Greg Monroe, who also had a decent game, and then he got in some foul trouble. But it's a weird situation down in Phoenix. It seems like a situation that no matter how many veterans they bring in, like they brought Tyson Chandler back, and no matter how many young picks they have, there's something that they can't put together. So maybe it's a coach, maybe it's a change in management. I don't know. I don't want to see these guys wasted, but to me, it feels like that might happen.
Call lines are wide open, guys. We're talking anything today you want. Suns, Eastern Conference complexion right now. The Celtics.
Oh, like how LeBron's doing it?
Yeah, the Cavaliers are coming, Taylor. They just keep the defensive rating has gone way down, which like is the right way down. You want it to be down. And they are, you know, hammering out their rotations, it looks like. Iman Shumpert's out of there, which I feel like is a addition by subtraction. And
he's a good defender, but they've been trying to make him play a little bit of point guard, and that's just not his game.
He's not a good player. I feel like you're always worried.
He's a good defender.
Out there.
He's a good defender.
Yeah, he used to be better though in his Knicks days. I think he had a ACL injury, and that always hurts the defense. He had some sort of big injury back in the day. Anyway.
Yeah, he knows.
But what do you think of the Cavs right now? They're back to who they are, aren't they?
I don't know if they're as good as they were last year. I think their age will catch up with them at some point, but they're figuring things out. LeBron's averaging 28-8-8. You know, he is my second favorite athlete behind Tom Brady. I'll go to bat for him. This is one of his best seasons of his career, and he's got everything going in the right direction. They're looking at IT's return in mid-December. IT seems to think he's going to come back, be the same 30-point scorer he was last year. Obviously, the points will probably be down. But the Cavs are coming. They figured things out in defense. A lot of it is effort. They're putting in so much more effort on the defensive end. I was listening to the Road Tripping podcast a couple days ago with Channing Frye. He had Kevin Love and D-Wade on as guests. And he said, we weren't trying the first couple games of the season on defense. Like, we were trying, but we've been going hard lately, and it's been showing. I think D-Wade's old man game is one of my favorite things in the NBA. The way he like kind of like half walks, half jogs up the court with the ball, then he like gives some poor young defender that like half turn around, then over the right shoulder fade away. He blocked Embiid a couple nights ago. He knows when to use his energy, and I think it's hilarious. Oh, but
and I'm looking at the schedule. I'm looking at the schedule coming up too: Grizzlies, Bulls, Kings, Pacers, Sixers, Hawks, Lakers. Like they're on a 10 game winning streak. That's going to keep going with the competition they're seeing coming up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it definitely makes when do the Celtics play them next? January 3rd?
January 3rd, yeah.
That'll make that game very interesting. Very interesting.
You know,
because IT,
you know what's
going to
make it interesting, too? Yeah, IT is expected back in a week and a half now, according to Brian Windhorst. That's when they're expecting him. So it's going to shake up the East. It's going to get very interesting. And LeBron, Kyrie, going at it. looking at the clutch stats the other day, the leaders in the league in clutch scoring, Kyrie's got 65 clutch points. LeBron's got 64. Can't make that up. You know, they keep asking Kyrie LeBron questions every day. He's not going to answer it. LeBron doesn't want to talk about it, but he definitely wants to put it online.
Oh, yeah.
The subtle hate between those two that neither will talk about but both clearly show, it's going to be fun because that kind of stuff plays out on the court. You know, that's not going to play out in the interviews, but that stuff spills over the court. You know when LeBron switches on to Irving, the crowd's going to be going, whoa!
Well, yeah. I mean, it happened the first game, but the first game was weird. Everyone wanted it to be this, you know, Kyrie versus LeBron showdown, and then Gordon Hayward's leg snapped in half after 5 minutes. So
that was the most anticlimactic game I've ever watched, and that's why the injury. That was another like that compounded how like emotional that injury was because that game was so big. Like that was like the show to open the season.
Yeah, for sure. But I don't think the tension between Kyrie and LeBron is as strong as people want it to be. I think there's definitely some resentment there on both sides. I think Kyrie didn't like how LeBron tried to control him, and I don't think LeBron necessarily enjoyed how Kyrie left. But I don't think that tension is as strong as people want it to be. They're trying to make this narrative that they hate each other, and I don't think that's true.
Well, the Celtics offense is coming a long way, bringing it back to them. We're seeing Irving really get comfortable finding that line between facilitating, scoring, even turning defense to offense. We've kind of seen him master every portion of his game just as we wanted to, and he is just a ferocious leader on this team right now. There was one great, great play early in this game, and credit to the Celtics. They came out firing today. They really established the pace that this game was going to be played at on both ends of the floor early. As close as it was, they were in control. And a big play part of that was Irving just completely stripping Booker of the ball, coming around Chandler on the screen.
Yep.
Gets it to Horford. Horford throws this pass. My God. This pass was absurd. This was Magic Johnson-esque. Seam up the floor, one bounce on a line right to Brown in transition, and then Brown throws it down ferociously. Jaylen Brown was so good today, too, bouncing back from his awful game against Philly.
Yeah,
this team's figuring out on offense, aren't they, Taylor? We'll get to the defense in a second, but the offense is coming a long, long way in the recent games, I feel like.
It sure feels like it. It definitely feels like it. The thing that I loved about today's game in regards to the offense is just how distributed the scoring was. You know, you've got Horford with 14 points, Tatum with 15, Kyrie with 19, Jaylen with 17, Marcus Morris with 17, which we should definitely talk about, and then Marcus Smart with 13. You've got, what is that, six guys in double digits, some other guys chipped in here and there. I think when you distribute scoring over over a bunch of people, that's more sustainable than – you know, one guy going off every night. So in a game that gets mucked up, in a game that gets, you know, chippy, or not necessarily chippy, it was just a weird game today. I think it's important to have a bunch of guys who can go get you a bucket instead of just looking at one. But I think the offense has come a long way. There's still some things that I don't like. I saw a bunch of guys, including Jared Weiss, talking about Terry Rozier as a point guard. You know, he's got great ball handling when situations are tight, but in transition, just trying to run pick and roll. He tends to over dribble a little bit and then dribble into either his player or a help defender, or he commits too much to the rim and he doesn't pass. But I think things are coming along well. Yeah, I'd like to see things be a little bit better, but they take time.
Yeah, and lineups come into play in that aspect too. I think the Celtics are still juggling a ton of different lineups right now to try to find themselves as a team in layers. But we're seeing some things start to settle out. I mean, Marcus Morris is starting to feel more like a bench player than a starter. I think, you know, a lot of us said Aaron Baines should be that center before the season and then rotate in Morris for those smaller lineups, and that's what we're starting to see now. I think it's still matchup dependent, but that's what we've started to see more in the recent game. And we're also seeing, you know, Rozier lead all those bench charges and Smart mixing in with Kyrie a lot more, which I think is an interesting dynamic when they're both out there together. So we're seeing a lot of weird mixing and matching right now. On Rozier, you know, he's gotten a ton of opportunity to lead that second unit this year. He's got a ton of ball time, a lot more than he has in the last 2 years. Looks like they're emphasizing him as a point guard more than a wing player, which I felt like he was the last 2 years. A smaller wing player, that is. He gets a ton of ball time, but I wonder, you know, he's not the greatest on the ball. He's solid. He's gotten much better. But yeah, why doesn't Jaylen Brown get more of that ball time? You know, I know that's not his specialty, but I just keep hammering at home. If he's going to be part of the core of this team for years to come, if he's going to become that superstar, he's going to get more ball time than he's getting. Like, how are you going to give Rozier that when he's not a master of it? But Brown doesn't get any, really.
I think it's pretty cut and dry. I think there's three things. I think, first of all, Terry Rozier is a point guard. I think they want him to be the point guard, especially with the prospect of Marcus Smart leaving the offseason.
Yes.
I think Jaylen Brown right now, if it was a younger team, I think you'd see him getting the ball a little bit more, or not a younger team, but less of a contender, you know, in regard to handling it. He's not a great ball handler. He does run transition offense sometimes. He'll bring the ball up. But I think his dribbling isn't where Brad wants it to be right now, so he's not going to see a lot of it. And also, I think the reason – one of the big things that I was excited about when they brought Hayward in is there was another guy who was a legitimate ball handler, you know, who could bring the ball up and you felt confident in it. This year, there's three guys who I feel pretty – or more than three guys, but three main guys in the starting lineup who I feel very confident bringing the ball up. Obviously, Kyrie, Al Horford, but I think Jason Tatum handling as well as he does has really taken the load off of Jaylen Brown's shoulders in regard to, like, being a ball handler. Jason Tatum, you know, we watch enough Celtics to know, like, the guy can dribble.
Yeah.
So I think that's why you're seeing less of Jaylen Brown getting opportunities. Jason Tatum is pretty good at it.
I get it, you know, and I'm a big proponent of this idea that the best guys get the minutes where they need to be filled. And Jaylen Brown's one of the worst dribblers on this team, so why would he be running point? And that makes sense. I'm just saying, though, if he doesn't get that practice within the flow of games, like, I just don't know how he's going to get better at it. And that's a concern of mine going forward. I know Snoddy would be killing me if he was on right now. It's year two. You don't have to be hammering the guy in year two. It's good he's advanced as much as he has already. And
I don't think you're hammering him. I think it's a legitimate thing. You know, with the way the small forward position is going, you got to be able to handle the rock.
Yeah, you know, and I'm projecting outward. You know, this is a guy that they're going to be committing to as one of the stars of this team for years to come. Hell, next season, this team's going to have championship expectations, you know? Whether that's fair or not, the roster's where it's going to be. The roster's going to be in a place where you're going to be looking at finals expectations next year, depending on where LeBron goes. So he's gonna make those advancements this year, and it's tough because you do walk that line of, you know, we're a great team, so we got to play the best guys. But there's a development aspect to this year, too.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. But in Brad we trust, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm going to have unwavering trust in Bill Belichick and Brad Stevens, and Brad we trust.
Yeah, and you know, as mad as it made people last year, the year before that, Jay Crowder played a ton. Jaylen Brown got stuck behind him last year. Marcus Smart got stuck behind Evan Turner earlier in their development. And, you know, it was tough for those guys early on, but it worked out in the wins and losses. They were winning games because the best guys were playing in the spots that need to be filled. So it definitely works on the wins and losses aspect, but you could hold some reservations about how it affects the young players and their development. Hell, look at Jason Tatum this year, the freedom he has gotten, as ready as he was. Do you think he'd be having the year he's having right now if Gordon Hayward didn't get hurt?
No. No way. I think Jason Tatum, I think his development has been so fast, so good because Hayward got hurt. I don't think, you know, a lot of people say it's field goal attempts. I think that's important, but I just think it's the role and the responsibility that was placed on him from, you know, after 5 minutes into his first NBA game, they look at him, they're like, hey, you're one of our five best players. Like, we need this. We need you to perform like a top five player on a contender. So I don't think he would have developed like this had Hayward not gotten hurt. I think he's a good player regardless, but I think getting him opportunities and giving him responsibility has been super important for his development. I think it's a big part of why he's developed so fast.
And Tatum has been phenomenal. Again today, so efficient. We got a stat from Greg Cassoli during the game of players in their rookie season who have played over 30 minutes a game. usage percentage over 17. So we're looking at some of the most used rookies in league history in that aspect. The only four who have ever shot over 60% true shooting, as Jason Tatum is doing right now, Buck Williams, Bill Cartwright, and Magic Johnson, 1980, rookie for the L.A. Lakers. So we're only talking about four guys, four rookies in the street to shoot as efficiently as Jason Tatum is right now. And Tatum's number one on that list, 63% true shooting. He's playing over 30 minutes a game, 17% usage percentage, lower than the other three guys, but still one of the most efficient rookie seasons ever we're seeing right now.
Yeah, and like if you just look at not advanced stuff, but just pretty basic stuff, he's tied for second in three-point percentage in the NBA. Not for rookies, like not in the Eastern Conference, in the NBA, he's got the second highest three-point percentage, and he's shooting like 48.6% from behind the arc. He was tied with Tony Snell. Tatum went 1-for-1 from three today, so that'll go up a little bit.
Yeah, and that's the key, too. That's the key, too. He's picking his spots so that efficiency's coming. You know, he's not throwing it out there at a high volume, which I think some people would like to see. But he's picking his spots, playing within the flow of the game right now. And that's why the efficiency numbers are just so ridiculous.
Yeah. I was thinking about it. There have been some great rookies in the NBA. You know, you had Anthony Davis, who is a monster. LeBron, who was a monster. Blake Griffin, even though he missed his technical first year, he was a monster in his actual rookie year. This year you got Ben Simmons, who's a 6'10 point guard, like a legitimate point guard, the closest thing to like LeBron I've ever seen. And then Donovan Mitchell, who put up 41 for Utah last night. But I don't know if I've ever seen a rookie as polished as Jason Tatum. Offensively, his footwork, the way he moves with the ball, the decisions he makes when he, you know, off-ball screening, the guy is polished. The guy knows exactly what he's doing on every possession, and it's impressive to see. Today, for example, Marcus Smart was dribbling at the top of the circle. Tatum went up to screen for him. Smart waved him away. Tatum went back to the wing, knew the play to come back up, set the screen. Marcus Smart went around it. He rolled, and Smart threw it up. Like, I thought it was an alley-oop. Tatum caught it, came down, and instead of trying to, like, power through contact, quick up fake, got the guy to jump by, easy layup. I don't know how many other rookies are doing that. You know, 19-year-old rookies are doing that. It's impressive to see.
And something I talked about with Kevin Connor before the season, too, are those second-level passes, get the ball in between within the flow of the offense, and either make your move or make a secondary pass. You saw him do it underneath the rim earlier in this game where he got it under – I think it was an offensive rebound, got double-teamed down there, flipped it around his back to Horford for the easy two inside. Another play, drove to the rim, nice little kick out to Baines. Baines does this weird thing where he doesn't spread it out to the three-point line, but he spreads it out to the 15-foot area and shoots out there.
Yeah.
Which, like, doesn't spread the floor, but, like, spreads the paint, I guess.
that's a good description of it.
So Tatum's doing good in that regard as well. Like, I think that was the biggest area you could point to coming into this year and say, you know, he did that in spurts at Duke, watched a lot of film. You know, you did see times where he was able to make those secondary reads while he was attacking. And he's doing that even well to start this year. And another thing I'll say, too, the biggest concern with him coming out of the draft was that he'd be too stagnant on offense. You know, it took a long time to make his reads at Duke. His three-point release was very slow motion, almost Amir Johnson-esque playing at Duke. We're seeing him get it off faster now. We're seeing him make his reads and the flow of the offense faster. So that was Sam Sheehan, who you hear on this show. That was his big concern about Tatum. In fact, Sam Sheehan hated the draft pick because he just felt stylistically Tatum did not fit with this team. And so far, I mean, there have been no stylistic issues for Tatum, have there?
No, absolutely not. And I think when you take a guy who it's obvious he knows exactly what he's doing on offense on every possession, I think when you take a guy like that, give him a coach like Brad Stevens, it's a match made in heaven. Mm-hmm. I think, I don't know, like I don't have words to describe it, but every time he does something, whether it's like a simple little roll or something that's just advanced beyond his age or advanced beyond the other rookies you see in the NBA, just I feel like the Grinch. My heart grows three sizes.
Oh, man, and it is so good to see him thrive because there was so much discussion before the draft between him and Josh Jackson and which guy the Celtics were going to take. It's a great day to talk about this with him going head-to-head with him.
Yeah.
It's scary to think absolutely. That they could have picked Josh Jackson. I know Snotty tweeted me during the game and said maybe Josh Jackson looked a little better in the Celtics system versus the Suns. I don't know. Like, there's no way Josh Jackson would be doing what Tatum is right now. No way whatsoever.
No, I agree with you. I don't think he's nearly as polished, and I don't think he'd be getting the minutes with the Celtics because Brad obviously trusts Tatum, and I don't know if he'd trust Jackson like that. But I think Snotty's right in saying that Jackson would look better with the Celtics than he does currently with the Suns. But the Jackson saga this summer was strange. When he was scheduled to have a second visit with the Celtics, but then Danny Ainge flew all the way across the country, and then Jackson canceled it on him because they wouldn't promise they were going to take him with the number 3 draft pick. It was very strange, and it was nice to see tonight. I mean, Jackson played all right, but Tatum, when he's getting clutch buckets down the stretch, it's nice to see Danny Ainge vindicated once again.
Yep, there we have it. And, you know, Brad Stevens probably plays a role in that as well. You know, I think that would be an interesting thing to look into when it comes to draft scouting is how big of a role Brad Stevens has in it now. And, you know, we talk a lot about Danny Ainge's draft history, and that is, you know, talk radio especially, that is where Ainge gets hammered the most, where, you know, Fab Melo, Jared Sollinger even now doesn't look like a great pick anymore.
Jimmy Young.
Yeah, oh my God. Some of the guys they've
RJ Hunter.
Some of the guys they've gotten out of Syracuse too.
Yeah.
For that matter.
Yeah.
So it hasn't been great for him, but you know, now over the last few years we've seen his prove immensely. You know, we got Terry Rozier in here who's looking like a good pick now. Tatum, Brown, Steele. I mean, Brown wasn't on some team's radar at the top of the draft, and now we're talking about him as maybe a star in this league. Who else we got in here now? Marcus Smart, great pick in the thick of that draft. You know,
Daniel Tice isn't a draft pick, but he's still a go over to Germany and find this guy and bring him over.
Yeah, and, you know, Ainge gets a lot of credit for that, understandably, but all of this has happened since Brad Stevens has become coach. You kind of think maybe Stevens is playing some role in this, too.
Yeah. In regard to Tice, Coley from Barstool tweets all the time. He's like, I have no idea how Daniel Tice isn't a Spur, because he's such a Spurs player, just a big European guy who just does everything perfectly. Like, I agree with Coley. I have no idea how he's a Spur, but it's very, like, Popovich-esque if Brad did have a lot of input into acquiring him. I saw you talking with Keith Smith on Twitter tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And he said you've been spoiled by the Celtics, and I definitely agree, but me and you are the same age. I've been and then now this team, they're one of the better teams in the NBA, and they have lottery picks every single year. Like, it's honestly, they've spoiled me. They spoiled you. I can't put it into words, but everything has just been working out this season, and it's really nice.
And we're not 100% spoiled. I mean, some of this is, if we're just talking about this season in particular, some of this is, you know, vindication for what happened to Hayes. I mean, we still had a year of finals contention stolen away from us in all probability because of that Hayward injury.
Yeah.
And, you know, as good as it's been so far, it could be even better right now, you know. I still think you could have some of those rookies come into play, get their run, and try to get their feet under them, even with Hayward playing big minutes above them. Some people say it's a blessing in disguise that happened, and it's silver lining that it happened because of how far Tatum and Brown have been able to come. But within the flow this year, you know, they could be doing even better if Hayward was here. And that is something that you know, we're blessed that it's gone as well as it has. Some people thought the season was over when Hayward went down. I didn't, but I didn't expect it to go this well. So I guess in some way we are spoiled with the season a little bit.
Yeah, I think the calling the Hayward injury a blessing in disguise is pretty.
Yeah, that wasn't the right word. The silver lining, I think, is the right word there.
I think silver lining is definitely the right word, but you're not the only person I've seen call it a blessing in disguise. Like, a lot of people have said, oh, like, Tatum being this good is a blessing in disguise. Ask Gordon Hayward if you think breaking his ankle was a blessing in disguise.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not. Like, it doesn't have a good connotation to it, but, you know, it just saying that this year was always going to be about getting these young guys up to par with the rest of the team, and
yeah,
that was always going to be a big part of this year, and now they've had space to do that, whereas with Hayward in here, probably not.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Like I said, like you asked me earlier, I don't think Tatum would have developed like he did had Hayward not gotten injured. but I would have liked to see it.
Afternoon game, guys. So I don't know what's going on, but it's Saturday. Call 347-215-7771. Talking Tatum, talking Suns, Josh Jackson in particular. Lots of good parallels there to talk about as the Celtics continue to see their season go in a great direction after after Gordon Hayward went down in game number one, 24 or 25 games later at this point, or 24 actually, yeah. Celtics are at 20-4, which is unbelievable. Losses to the Pistons, Cavs, Bucks, and who's the team I'm missing there?
Miami,
yes. So, few slip-ups, even wins, they've had some slip-ups, but that record is impeccable right now. We're a fourth of the way through the season, and Celtics are discernibly the best of the best in the league when it comes to record. We can debate whether or not that actually is true in substance, but, you know, you can't argue with a record at the end of the day. A win's a win on a day like today as well, so let's hear from you. 207 is with us on the show. Who we got here?
Blair.
All right.
Blair.
Hey, what's up, Blair?
Hello?
What's up, Blair?
You can hear me this time. Sorry about last. I called in, yesterday, the last game, and I must have not spoke up fast enough.
All right, man, what do you got?
Hey, it's such a great win. It was a close game, great win, you know, close game, but it's because Booker, you know, the whole team over there played great from Arizona, the Suns. Phoenix Suns, they played great. They got a couple good players played great, kept it close. Always close games are really good to have, you know, always fun to watch. You don't want to blow out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, anyways, come on now.
Come on.
Yeah, I want to blow out. I want the Celtics to blow every team out.
Taylor, listen, I got to speak to you a second about that one. A close win is better than a blowout. Come on. Even when you're going
against
that team.
Against one of the worst teams in the Western Conference.
Oh, this is a hard stance of mine. Even when you're going against the worst teams in the league, it's good to get that run because across the league, and this is true now more than ever, you have great players on every single team. The Suns are bad, but they have Booker. They have Tyson Chandler, who's still a very good center. You have Greg Monroe, who's a Celtics killer. You got to play these close games to develop as a team, even when it's against bad competition.
I don't disagree. I don't disagree at all. But when it's a team like that today, when they're the fourth worst team in the Western Conference, and we know what kind of, you know, turmoil they've been through, I would have liked the Celtics 30-point win. But it didn't happen, so let's not talk about that.
It is good for rest, though, I'll tell you that. And I'm going to keep hammering home this Horford point. Like, I want to see him get a night off here or there. You know, maybe. And I guess you say, like you said earlier, and I don't think we stuck on this conversation long enough, they don't really have a guy behind him who can fill in and do what he does that they need as a team to function. Like, everything he does is so pivotal to the way they play as a team. And I don't think people understand that enough. Maybe they would understand if they saw him out of the lineup for a night. It's tough. So maybe there isn't the depth behind him to provide a night like that for him. But that's where I say, you know, your roster isn't full right now. You have that disabled player exception. Go out and get a guy. You're not going to find Horford on the open market, but find a guy who can at least fill in for him for a night. If that's not Daniel Tice, if that's not Aaron Baines, you know, go out there and get it. Like it's early in the season. You want to have that flexibility later if someone comes up. And maybe you sacrifice a few games to find just the right guy when that moment comes. But that roster spot's right there. In fact, I think they have two roster spots open right now. And then you can always send your booth away to Maine. You can always – Jabari Bird goes back and forth between Maine. So they have the space to make it happen and get Horford that rest. Because the worst thing that can happen to this team right now is for Horford to get hurt.
Oh, absolutely. But I think they're going to wait for the buyout market to take place. Or, you know, to present itself in a more clear way before they do anything with that $8.3 million.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because if someone like, even though I'm not huge on Jahlil Okafor, I know some Celtics fans are, if he gets bought out and they can get him cheap, Noel in Dallas gets bought out, you know, I think they're going to wait for a player like that rather than go out and get anyone on the open market. Because off the top of my head, I can't think of any forward or big man on the open market who I'd really want in the Celtics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you could always make a trade too, but it's the trade market doesn't open up till later in the season, I guess, and everyone kind of feels like they're still in play for the playoffs right now, so I understand
yeah.
that. It's just frustrating to see
absolutely
Horford play so much, and especially, you know, this is a team that doesn't have to, you know, the regular season's important. I'm not going to go back on that take. I've always felt like the regular season is important, but having a healthy team for the playoffs is far more important. And, you know, this team's aspirations are different this year. I still think a lot of us are struggling to find out what expectations of this team ultimately are. Like, at this point where they started so good, would the second round be a disappointment? You know, a first-round exit would, of course, be a disappointment. Is East Finals, like, a reasonable bar to hold them to, even with this being kind of a developmental year? I don't know.
Like, I think you and I come look at this season a little bit differently. Once Hayward got hurt on that post-game show we did, I did say I thought they're going to be a 4 or 5 seed. Obviously, that's not the case. They'll be a 1 or 2 or 3 seed. You know, they're 24. They're in the 1 seed now. I don't know if title aspirations are out of the question this year, or at least going to the finals. But I see what you're saying about, you know, expectations changing this year. And the thing is, with Horford, it's hard to recreate what he does. I can't think of, like, someone who can dribble up and down the court, who can shoot the three.
Yeah, you're not going to find – there's no way to replicate what he does, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, he hasn't gotten the respect he's deserved over his entire career, and now he's finally getting it, and you realize how valuable he is and how – like, he doesn't – Al Horford's aren't a dime a dozen. They don't grow on trees.
And, you know, this conversation does really point out just how valuable he is. Like, we're not sitting here saying, like, oh, you know, they can't really replicate what Kyrie does. You can't replicate what Kyrie does, but you can get other guards to function at the guard position, at least. You know, Marcus Smart does some that in some capacity, and he's a special guy himself. But even Terry Rozier gives you good minutes there. Like, you can get point guard production behind your point guard. How do you get that production behind your center, who's a point guard and a wing shooter and a, you know, dynamic inside presence and just such a great defender at so many different positions? Al Horford is really the epitome of positionless basketball.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the play that happened, I think it was right before the half. Or maybe right before the end of the third quarter. I can't remember. He got the ball on the opposite side of the court. He dribbled up and he was flying. He was like, normally he takes his, you know, he paces himself when he runs fast break. He was moving, drove it down. Marcus Morris cut to his right and then he just dumped it off with the left hand without even looking at Morris. And I don't know how many big men in the NBA, power forward or center, can actually do that. I don't know if there's 6 or 7 other guys who can recreate that. You know, Jokic gets a lot of, you know, praise for his passing. LeBron, I guess if you want to consider him a big man, could obviously do stuff like that. But outside of a handful of guys, there aren't a lot of guys who can recreate what Al Horford does.
And it's so annoying how brutally underappreciated he is, especially within this market. Like, look at it. We talk a lot about Boston fans and Celtics fans and, you know, how they maybe overhype some guys or overappreciate some guys who maybe don't deserve it so much. How do you not, like, raise Horford up to a mythical level, like, when that's what you do routinely with guys? I don't understand how when things go bad here, you turn to Horford and say, they need more from him. Like, I don't think you can even look at his tenure in Boston and criticize him at all. Like, and I know everyone's deserving of a little bit of criticism here or there, but there are very far and few in between moments for Horford since he's on a Celtics uniform where you could say, wow, they didn't get enough from him. In fact, I think it's the opposite. He's given them so much more as a team than they ever could have imagined. And I know it's a buckets league, and he's not a buckets guy, and that's where it comes from. But how do you look at a stat line like today? And I know people are going to do it. 14 points. 5 rebounds, 11 assists. And people are going to say, yeah, he could have gotten a few more. Like, you should look at that stat line and, like, be in awe. Like, how many guys in the league can do that at his position? And I guess it's a niche skill.
Yeah, consistently, like, do it. Like, the thing about Al Horford is that's normal. Like, what happened today, and maybe that's why he doesn't get appreciated too, maybe that factors into it, is that that's normal for Al Horford. I'm glad that you know, we're doing this right now, and because we don't have a ton of other stuff to, you know, really get into, because it is, what day is it? December 2nd, 2017 is Bobby Manning, Taylor McLeod, Al Horford Appreciation Day.
Yeah.
And I love it.
Absolutely. And you need to appreciate Al Horford every single day. I'm glad his sister's on Twitter, because she dishes out the angry backlash that, like, it needs to be dished out for how he gets treated. It's ridiculous. It's even in the home market, like, if I was Jim Boeheim right now, like, I'd be like, overrated. Like, are you kidding me? This guy more than anyone else. And I remember
all time Boeheim
this season. Early this season, we got a call from a guy, not a regular call on here, just a spot caller, who was like, yeah, Al just isn't giving it to them. Al just is not giving them enough right now. And I forget who was on with me, but I just restrained myself from exploding on him, because I'm a nice guy. I don't explode on any of these callers ever. I appreciate all our callers. I love them. But that's just so bogus. Like, the most valuable player on this team to the success. I think if you lost him right now, the impact on them would be more jarring than if you lost Irving. And I'm not saying the impact wouldn't be jarring if they lost Irving. They'd be screwed if they lost him too. But I think it's just a slightly more wide area of impact that Horford gives them than Kyrie gives them. And I'll let you go in just a second. But there's something to the fact that Horford touches every single area slightly rather than kills it in any of them. And I think people look at scoring like what Irving does, where the way he finishes, the way he gets the paint, stuff like that, where he does that such a dynamic level that sticks out more. But there's something great about being able to impact every single area of the game at above average level like Al does.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think the coolest thing about Horford and Kyrie is they block the best parts of each other. Like, their two-man game is beautiful. You know, Kyrie played very well with LeBron, but LeBron obviously controls so much of every game he plays in, so it's a little bit different. Kyrie and Al, they play together for 24 games, and it looks like they've been playing together forever, and I think it's just because of their games. Like, Kyrie's this point guard who, even though people think he's just an isolation scorer, we've seen over the course of the first quarter of the season that he's so much more than that, and he's got a big forward, a big power forward, who for some reason people have tried to pigeonhole him as a center his whole career. But he's got this big power forward who loves to pass, who loves to get out and run, who could shoot the three ball, and they work so well together. I understand that it's a buckets league, and I love buckets. You know, like, Kyrie Irving is one of my favorite players in the NBA. When you see those two guys working off each other so perfectly, and they're cutting at the right time, and they're getting everyone else involved, it's beautiful. It's Celtics basketball. And
oh, my God, that play.
That's what wins.
That play where they transition the stop to the Brown dunk is just my favorite play of the year. Like, that is just such a function of what Horford brings to them. And Kyrie, you know, we'll transition this to Kyrie a little bit now too. Like, his defense is legit. You know, I was wrong about it.
Yes,
a lot of people told me coming into this year that he's capable of defense, but he just wasn't showing it, which I hate. There's nothing I hate more talking about sports as a guy who talks about sports quite a bit. Then, yeah, he can do this, but he's not trying. Or the Cavs last year, yeah, they're doing just fine, but they're not trying.
It annoys me. You saw what happened.
I saw what happened, but, like, you're still struggling if you're not trying. Like,
I agree. If you lose one
and you say after you don't try, you still lost. Like, that's always annoyed me. But anyway, back to Irving, turned out being a little bit true in that case too. There's just an extra effort, an extra intensity. Maybe it's a product of the environment, but he's a different guy on defense this year. Even Matt Moore, who is notoriously critical of the Celtics, is just giving him credit where credit's due. He has the most deflections on this team, more than Marcus Smart, which is unbelievable.
Yeah, he's playing. You know, I think he's a better one-on-one defender than Steph Curry, because I think him and Curry are the same height, but I think Kyrie's built a little bit differently, where he can take a little bit more contact. But he's starting to play a little bit of a Steph defense game, where he's deflecting a lot of balls, and he's got quick hands. You know, like on the play we're talking about, Booker dribbled into him, and within a half a second, Kyrie had the ball and was pushing it ahead. You know, he took it right from him, got it to Horford, and then, you know, Jalen got the dunk. You know, I know you don't like it when you say people, you know, aren't trying or whatever, but I think we've seen so many times with Cleveland, especially on defense, that sometimes that environment isn't conducive to playing the best individual or team defense. So I think what you're looking at is a guy who has always been capable of playing defense, but wasn't in the best situation to actually go out there and do it. But if you look at his 2016 finals, he played very well against Steph Curry. And I was on the show a couple weeks ago, and I had brought up this article about, you know, and it was, I think, headlined like Kyrie's playing the best defense of his career against the two-time MVP. And it's true. He's a good defender, and now he's in an environment where everyone wants to be good defenders, and you're really seeing how it's affecting him in a positive way.
Fun day of basketball here. Afternoon, Celtics, Suns. Looking ahead, the schedule for the Celtics going forward. Haven't done that yet, so this is my first reaction to what's coming up. On Monday, they got the Bucks at home. Great game, 7:30.
Yeah, they beat the Celtics at home earlier this year, so Kyrie already said it. He's like, we didn't forget. We want them.
Yeah, and they haven't had a great season. I think you got to look at Jason Kidd being next on the hot seat. We've seen a couple coaches go already this year in weird fashion, but if anyone deserves it right now, probably Kidd with how they're underperforming, because you'd expect them to be top four in the East with what they have there. Mavericks in town on Wednesday, Spurs road trip on Friday. Then you got the Pistons, the Bulls on the road after that. So a tough little stretch of games coming up for the Celtics here, Taylor, besides the Mavericks and Bulls, of course.
Yeah, I mean, the Bucks and Spurs should give them a challenge. I don't know if Kawhi's going to be back. I'm pretty sure I saw that Pop said he would be a couple more weeks. So second now, that's 6 days away. I doubt we see Kawhi in that Spurs game. I think the Mavs and Bulls shouldn't give them too much, you know, too many problems. But the Bucks, the Spurs, and then obviously the Pistons, who have one of the Celtics. It's two teams who have Celtics four losses this year in Milwaukee and Detroit. So I think you're right. I think they're looking at a tough little stretch of games, but that's what you got when you're trying to win championships.
Yep. And Celtics are going to be moving on. We're moving on as well today. We're going to get one more call in, and then we are done for the day at 4:30. I am going to be on to my Syracuse Orange playing the Kansas Jayhawks this afternoon. Going to be fun.
Sir.
ESPN, want to check it out. You're going to be able to see this team that people are underrating a little bit, but I swore I would not talk Syracuse on here, and I will not do that. So 413 is with us here to wrap this show up. Thanks for waiting so patiently. Who do we have?
That's my area code. They're probably just listening.
All right, cool. Yeah, so let's wrap this up, Taylor. Biggest takeaway today, are you worried about that defensive rating that just keeps rising right now? Or is it just, you know, the afternoon, some tough team? I mean, this isn't a tough team coming in here, so that's not really an excuse. But how concerned are you about the defensive rating going up like it has?
I'm not really concerned at all. I think it's a result of you go on this 18-game win streak, I think you get burned out a little bit. You know, mm-hmm. I think the Celtics will be above average defensively, but I think it'll start to level off. I think they'll find their groove. I'm not that worried. If you want my biggest takeaway from the game, it's that Marcus Morris got his revenge on Phoenix. He said in 2015 he wants to disrespect them whenever he plays them. Disrespected them today. Played well. Good sign or good trade for the Seas. I don't have any really hot takes or you know, crazy takeaways from the game. It was a weird one early Saturday afternoon. A win's a win. Wasn't pretty, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yep, and I'm concerned about that defensive rating going up because I think a big reason they've won so many other games so far is because of that steady defense night in, night out. Like we always say, defense is something you can bring to every single game, unlike shooting. And that's a true mantra. These defensively powerful teams are brutally consistent, even against some of the best teams in the league. So I want to see that stay where it is. The rebounding concerns me too, because
was
rock solid to start the year. And it was really a disaster today. They lost that battle 45-31 today. There was that play where Tyson Chandler like tipped it up three times. That was probably like half their rebounds. But yeah, it was domination today. It's a big, big team there in Phoenix. They got Monroe too. It's funny, when the game started, I was like, oh, I hate watching the Suns play. But then I'm like, oh crap, Greg Monroe's coming too. So, yeah. And I said it earlier too, no teams are walking the park anymore. Every team has good players, except maybe the Kings, but that's a different issue. No team's really going to be a walk in the park. So, good on the Celtics for finishing it out today. Good on us for finishing this show out. Bobby Taylor, not a lot of callers today, but we did 60 strong. We'll see you guys Monday night, 10 o'clock sharp, after the Celtics play the Bucks from the TD Garden. Don't know who's on yet. I'll be making the schedule for December today. And that's it. Thanks for being with us here today. Thanks for your insight today, Taylor. And
yes, we
will see you next time. Good afternoon, everybody.
This has been the Celtics postgame show on CLNSradio.com. Thanks for listening. The Celtics might not be in action every day, but we are, so stay connected. Follow us on Twitter at CLNSradio and check out our broadcast schedule for the best weekly sports podcasts on the web.